to me, the essential element of a heist movie is fun.
Yes.
You know, if it's not fun, walk away. It should be the same rule with gambling, I think.
I mean, it's literally called a caper.
That's true. Should be a little bit of fun.
I'm often asked what my favourite con artist movie is, and I always have a different answer. Usually I'll say Ridley Scott's Matchstick Men or David Mamet's House of Games. But if I'm feeling a little pretentious, I might name drop Fellini's Il Bidone or Robert Bresson's Pickpocket. At the same time, I also have a soft spot for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Paper Moon, and Brothers Bloom. But if you were to ask me what the worst con artist movie of all time was, I would always answer the same thing. The Sting 2. Released a decade after the original with none of the original cast, The Sting 2 is a mess. With a nonsensical plot and a complete lack of charm, The Sting 2 is a forgotten film that deserves to be forgotten. On this episode of the podcast, I talk to Nick Mason from The Weekly Planet about why I hate this movie so much and find out whether The Sting 2 actually deserves my disdain. A quick note, throughout the episode, I repeatedly refer to Mac Davis as Mac King. Mac Davis is one of the stars of The Sting 2. Mac King is a comedy magician I once saw eat a guinea pig on stage in Las Vegas. My apologies to Mac King. If you enjoy the episode, check out my Patreon in the show notes below. A few dollars a month makes a huge difference to the show. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. I'm very excited that you're doing this. I have a confession to make, though, before we start. When I asked you,
yes,
my thinking was, my good friend Nick Mason.
That's me.
He's always got great opinions about movies, and we talk all the time about films, and he's been on the podcast before.
That's right.
It was, you know, a few years ago, but that's fine. And then I asked you, and then I realized, hang on, we don't talk all the time. We haven't spoken to each other in a very long time. But because I listened to the Weekly Planet podcast,
absolutely,
I had developed a parasocial relationship with you.
With your actual friend.
With my actual friend. I'd replaced our actual friendship with a parasocial relationship.
Oh my goodness.
And so me asking you didn't feel like me coming to you out of the blue after literally a couple of years and saying, hey, can you be on my podcast? It was just asking my old mate Nick Mason.
That's right. Well, happy to be part of the parasocial relationship. That's good. That's the magic of podcasting, I think.
It didn't help that when I told B, my kid, that, I go, you know, because sometimes I say I'm interviewing people and it's like, oh, I'm talking to an academic from Canada and they don't care. Uh-huh. But I said, oh, yeah, I'm doing an interview. Oh, who with? And I go, oh, we're talking about a movie. It's my friend Nick Mason. Oh, he does that podcast with us. And they were so excited. It was like a celebrity was coming.
Oh my goodness. I noticed they're not here now.
No, then I sent them away.
Okay, good.
Sent them away.
Good idea.
They're not high enough status.
Look, I'll be honest. I do that a lot. I have a lot of conversations with people where I go, oh yeah, a friend of mine was just saying this. And then midway through the thought, I'm like, a friend of mine wasn't saying this. I heard it on a podcast, but they're my friend in a way.
They are your friends. They are. And that's part of, I think, what makes podcasting nice is you build up these little communities of people who feel like they actually know you and feel like they... But I feel like I do actually know you and I have no excuse for doing that.
You do know me in real life. We have to get over this hump, Nicholas J. Johnson.
Okay, we're going to move on.
Nicholas J. Johnson, I feel like we have the type of friendship where we don't see each other for several years and then we get back in a room and it feels like it's been no time has passed at all.
That's all I wanted you to say. Thank you.
All right.
So we're talking today about The Sting 2, a film that I feel like I have inflicted upon you.
Well, look, you were very kind enough. You said we should talk about a movie, a heist or a con-style movie, and you gave me a massive list. You gave me all the movies that you watched to write your books, all the movies you were inspired by, and just a list of some of the best and worst. So you gave me the pick of the litter, but you did intrigue me because you said The Sting 2, parentheses, the worst heist movie. And first of all, I didn't even know there was a Sting 2, so that was pretty thrilling. And I'm like, the worst heist movie, all right. Now, what are you basing the worst on?
That is on how it made me feel in my soul to watch it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't really like saying films are good or bad.
Okay.
But I obviously, like, I don't.
So this must be very, it must be a very intense feeling to be like, this is the worst.
Yeah,
it was. Statistically speaking, because I looked it up, the Rotten Tomatoes rating for this movie is 0%.
Yeah.
Now, and for people who don't understand how the Rotten Tomatoes rating works, that doesn't mean that everybody who reviewed it said it was a 0 out of 10 movie. All that means is everybody who reviewed it said on balance it's more of a bad movie than a good movie. So it's still technically 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Still 0% of people thought it was a good movie. That being said, I did look at the Rotten Tomatoes page, and there were only 9 reviews for it.
Yeah.
So, you know. And they're all modern reviews as well.
Yes.
And I think they're all modern reviews through the lens of, well, I love The Sting, and I've got to watch the sequel kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they've coloured it in a little bit. They're
I think when you're talking about a sequel, though,
yes,
it's perfectly acceptable to compare it or to place it within the context of other films.
Right, indeed.
Like the other film.
Like the first film, sure.
Like the first film. Uh-huh, like sure. You can't, it's a yeah. continuation of the story.
Yes.
It's like chapter 2.
It's a continuation of a sort.
Oh, it's not, that's where it gets complicated.
So if you've seen the original, it's Paul Newman
yep.
and Robert Redford,
mm-hmm.
and they've got to get a sting going, and that's set in the 20s, 30s. When is that set?
It's set during the Depression. So
okay.
It's the late 20s.
Really. Okay, right.
Yeah.
And this movie is set some years later with two characters not played by Redford and Newman.
No.
Who have the same names but not really.
Yeah.
They have the same surnames but not the same first names, I think.
Yeah. There's a subreddit called Walmart Celebrities where
uh-huh.
people post pictures of people who's and they always have funny names
uh-huh.
that are sort of not quite, you know.
Like yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Like, you know, Denny Radcliffe, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
That was the best thing I could come with off the top of my head. And it feels like that. It feels, it's like they couldn't use the real names because they didn't want to get sued. So
yes.
It's the off-brand names. So you had Johnny Hooker. Played mm-hmm. by Robert Redford
uh-huh.
in the first film, became Jake Hooker, played by Mac King, country singer Mac King, in the second film. Fargo Gondoff, played by Paul Newman in the first film, became Henry Gondoff in the second film. And Lonergan, who was in the first film, is still Lonergan in the second film.
And so you might think, okay, well, these are just people who share similar names. What are the odds? Maybe everybody uses the same alias or something. But this movie also does directly reference stuff from the previous movie.
Yeah.
So is it a sequel or is it not a sequel? So points against it for starters.
There is the screenwriter, Jeremy Paul Kagan, said, The Sting 2 is inspired by and is an expansion of the first Sting rather than a continuation.
Okay.
The principal characters of Fargo Gondoff and Jake Hooker are based on two very famous real-life con men and are totally different from the two characters in the original.
Okay. All right.
So it's very... It feels like... Maybe they wanted to make it more sort of like an anthology and have a completely different story.
The True Detective of its time.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. But instead, maybe the studio put some pressure on them and they ended up having to sort of make it as close to the original as they possibly
could.
Yeah,
I mean, you could have said, okay, they're cousins of the originals or something. And
yeah.
It's an Ocean's 8 situation.
Oh, I was going to... Gosh, you're classier than me. I was going to go with the straight-to-DVD American Pie...
Oh, sure.
Sequels where yes, it's like, this is Stifler's cousin and this is Stifler's little brother and this is Stifler's second cousin twice removed. So you're much more sophisticated. Uh-huh. You even went for a heist film.
That's like, true. I did, yeah. Yes. Have you talked about Ocean's 8 on this podcast?
No, I haven't. I did not enjoy Ocean's 8
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. I see those particular types of heist films as a puzzle
uh-huh.
that you have to try and figure out, oh, how are they going to get away with this?
Uh-huh.
How are they going to figure it out? And there's a moment where they have pull out some glasses that are essentially magic glasses
uh-huh.
that scan and get a 3D scan of it.
Right, uh-huh, yeah.
And you go, oh, you have magic. You have magic, so it doesn't really work.
And the look, if we may divert into Ocean's 8 for a moment. Mm. I mean, I love the cast of that movie, but the script seems like it's going out of its way to remove any tension.
Mm.
Because there's a moment in it where they're attempting to... They trick an actor into demanding this beautiful necklace that she can take to the Met Gala,
yeah.
And they're going to steal it off her neck
mm-hmm.
during the proceedings. And they learn before the heist that the only way to take the necklace off is with this little magnetic doohickey that they don't have. And so one of the characters just says, "Oh, I know somebody who could sort that out." and they go, here's a little doohickey. I've built it for you. And then they go into the Met Gala and they just use the doohickey.
Yeah, there's no creativity.
Ideally, you would go into the heist not knowing you need that.
Mm.
Or you go in and it doesn't work and then you have to improvise. Also, at the end of that movie... I have one more point, and then I'll never speak about Ocean's 8 again.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, the way they get the necklace out of the building is they break it up into little pieces and they turn it into other pieces of jewelry, and then they wear the jewelry out.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you just break it off her neck in the first place? Just snap it at the back and... Why you don't need the doohickey.
Yeah, I think, though, so for me... What brought me around to the movie was I went and saw it in the cinema, maybe opening weekend, by myself. And I was sort of going, okay, yeah, all right. I mean, yeah, they're all really charismatic. All the characters are there and it's all really charismatic, but all of those problems, there's a lot of cheating. There's a lot of magic. There's a lot of Deus Ex Machina going on. But there's a moment where Rihanna is in the film and there's several moments where she's in the film and she's the whole way through she's dressed in grungy street clothes. She doesn't care about anything, and then at the big moment when they escape with the jewels, she's suddenly transformed and wearing this beautiful evening gown, and she walks down these stairs looking absolutely radiant, and she's wearing all this beautiful jewelry and it's beautifully shot and it's the incredible sort of transformation of the character. And the audience applauded.
Oh, wow. Okay,
and
sure.
That moment. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's okay, right. This is, and I'm like, this is a different movie. This is not the movie.
What a character arc.
What a character arc. But it wasn't the character arc. It was just like, there's Rihanna looking great, wearing this incredible jewelry.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board. And I was like, oh, this is not, I know it's a heist movie, but this is not the type of heist movie that I think it is.
Yeah, right.
And that thing that annoyed us as a couple of point-and-click adventure fans
that's right.
is that the puzzles that they had to solve, we wanted puzzles for them to
that's
solve.
That's right, exactly.
And that were difficult and tricky and had creative solutions. And they gave us something else.
Yes.
And maybe it wasn't necessarily for me.
Mm.
So that's, anyway, I came to peace with it.
Anyway, here's the thing that I like about this movie. I think the cast is pretty good.
Sting 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible cast.
Jackie Gleason is in this.
Yep.
Mac Davis, who you mentioned, who I'd not seen in anything before this, but you mentioned he's a country music.
Yeah.
He wrote A Little Less Conversation, the Elvis song, which is in Ocean's 11.
Yes,
so there's
he did.
A fun little...
Yeah.
That seems like it links together in a fun way.
Well, I think at this point in his career, I did a bit of research and I get the impression looking at the choices he made that he was trying to reinvent himself as a bit of a sex symbol.
Okay.
And so it was like, well, I'll play the Robert Redford role in
Sting 2, right.
Makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's a strong... He's not Robert Redford.
He's absolutely not Robert Redford, no.
Yeah.
But we also get Oliver Reed.
Yes.
Who I thought was delightful.
Well, he was supposed to play Lonergan in the first film.
I see.
And he couldn't, so he had to pull out.
Because he was drinking?
Probably.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. And Jackie Gleason, you mentioned. So Jackie Gleason, while he wasn't in the first film, started out in gangster movies, set in this era.
Right.
Playing these types of characters. He was in... The Hustler with Paul Newman.
Of course, yeah.
So, which is a semi-con artist movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I watched it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pool ball hustling. So he's got the obviously the talent, but also it's part of his DNA, the movie.
So when you mentioned this, I looked up. I thought, based on the timing of this, that the Sting 2 was probably an attempt to cash in on the Hustler's sort of legacy sequel, The Color of Money. But The Color of Money came out several years after this.
Yeah.
So maybe the producers of The Color of Money were like, "Well, we should do a good one of these.
Yeah.
We should. Hey, this Sting 2 was bad. Let's do a good one, perhaps. I don't know.
I think so. Yeah. I think there's definitely because they are very much. I mean, you could do a whole comparison of The Color of Money and the Sting 2 of how to continue a beloved con artist movie.
Yeah, we're in the era of that now. We're calling them legacy quills now, I think. Maverick, Top Gun Maverick, what else?
Dial of Destiny's coming out.
Dial of Destiny's coming out, that's true. Yeah. There was a new Matrix movie. And this, to an extent, is a legacy quill. I mean, it's nearly, was it 10 years between these two?
Yeah.
So, Yeah, strike while the iron's hot. That's what I say.
Yeah, that's it. Took them 10 years to get away. And nobody comes back for this. The only person who's really back is the screenwriter.
Right.
Same screenwriter. Who
had one idea.
Who had one idea. And it wasn't even his idea.
Oh, no.
So the story of The Sting is that the movie came out, and what The Sting did... By the way, you should check out our episode on The Sting from 6 years ago.
All right.
But what The Sting did was to create the modern con artist movie.
Right, so yes.
If I say a con artist movie, you go, oh, yeah, it's a con artist, maybe two con artists, and they find someone who is a bigger criminal and a worse person than them.
Yes.
That makes them look heroes in comparison.
That's right, yes.
And then they decide, after pulling some short, small little cons, that they have to scam this guy,
this bad guy.
And all these things go horribly wrong, but it turns out in the end, all the things going horribly wrong was part of the scam.
That's right.
And there's a big twist in the end, and they walk off with the money.
Yes.
With very few exceptions. And the exceptions are usually ones that play on our, you know.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes it'll be they don't get the money, but they learned a valuable lesson about something and they got their daughter back or whatever it was. And,
yeah,
you know,
and,
you know, very rarely, you know, do they end up being killed in jail. For example.
Yeah, and it's about the con artist. In those movies, the con artist is, they're like the renegade cop. They're like Dirty Harry. They're breaking the rules, but they're doing it to get justice.
That's right.
And that's why we like them and forgive them.
They got to bust open the MGM Grand and the the other two.
The
other two big casinos.
The Bellagio was one.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the Cosmopolitan.
Let's leave the third one for the listeners shout at us about. You idiots. Yes. How could you not know it was the Crown Casino in Melbourne? They found a tunnel to Crown Casino in Melbourne.
I would love...
It was in Galactic Circus, the arcade. That's where the tunnel was.
I would love a Crown Casino heist movie.
Oh, my God.
That would be a...
They would never let you in because you might learn something about the inner workings of Crown Casino, and they wouldn't be having that, I don't think.
Yeah. I know some things about the inner workings of Crown Casino from working there.
Oh, boy.
And it's very difficult. You can't do a magic show at Crown Casino unless you do a short course on the correct way to weld on the roof. You have to do like a whole induction. And one of the questions was about safety when welding on the roof of Crown Casino. And I was going to do card tricks.
That's incredible.
Yes. Anyway, the Sting 2.
Yes.
So the Sting 1 came out and it was this big hit because the music was great.
Yep.
The performances were great. And it was this original story that then inspired an entire genre.
Sure, yeah.
Except then the filmmakers got sued by a guy called David, or the estate of a guy called David Maurer, who wrote a book called The Confidence Man. I'm going to have to check. The Big Con, which was a book, technically it was a linguistics book that was about the lingo used by con artists. So when we talk about the inside man and the roper and the cackle bladder and all those kind of words.
The little guy in the room service cart.
Yes, exactly. You know? That's
that classic term.
That's a term that's in the book. But it also explains how these scams work.
Mm.
And one of the chapters is called The Wire, and it is literally the plot of The Sting.
Oh, interesting.
And so the publishers and the estate of David Maurer sued the makers of The Sting.
But he didn't invent this particular con.
No.
Okay.
He didn't invent it. It was a non-fiction book.
Right.
But he depicted it in such detail.
I see.
That it was clearly... This is where you got all... Yeah,
right.
So, you know, it's that so much of it came from this one place.
You'd need a charismatic frontman like a Robert Redford, for example.
That kind of stuff, isn't
it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's so clearly that that's where it's from.
Oh,
a little bit like the guys who tried to sue the Da Vinci Code author.
Oh, right.
They tried to sue him because their non-fiction book basically outlined huge chunks of the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, I see.
And you've taken that from our,
our
book. So similar sort of case. It was settled out of court, so we don't actually know what happened. But clearly this is not the, you know, he had one idea and it came from this other place.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I guess this script writer was a bit gun shy, which is why it took him 10 years to...
Yeah, perhaps. Mm. Or, you know, he didn't have another book to pinch an idea
I guess
from.
That's probably true, yes.
Yeah. And I do think even though... And this is a controversial opinion to have.
But you'll say anything.
I'm going to say anything. I think The Sting is overrated. I think it's got great actors and it's got nice music.
Yeah.
And I think that it created this very nice structure for a story.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's actually that good a film.
Interesting.
I think it's got the pacing's a bit all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that really gets to me about it is all of the tension and all of the drama of the film is undone at the very end, and none of it mattered.
Right, all of
the
course,
things,
yes.
Yeah, all the things you cared about. Mm-hmm. You care about the relationship between Robert Redford and the dame. Oh, no, wait, turns out she doesn't care. She's actually an assassin.
Right,
You know, oh no, you're worried about the tension between the two of them. Nope, they're just pretending. Nope, the police aren't after them. Nope, the FBI isn't involved. None of that means anything. It's all part of a scam. Mm. Nothing means anything. Reality is a lie.
There is a fine line, I think, the where the reveal takes place in a heist movie, whether or not you care anymore.
Yes.
You know, if I can go back to my favorite series, which is The Oceans. Oceans 12, I think.
Mm.
The reveal towards the end of that, if I remember correctly, because I haven't seen it in some time because it was bad, is they stole the item in question sort of weeks ago. That was the reveal. So nothing you saw in the movie really mattered at all. It was just a pantomime.
Yeah.
So...
And they do something similar in the first film where they lie to Matt Damon's character.
That's right.
And pretend that they're having an argument just to mess with him a bit.
Yeah.
Which is also in the exactly what happens in The Sting 2.
Yes.
And so, so because of that problem, I think we remember The Sting fondly. But when you go back and watch it again, it's like, it's actually, just get to the point.
It's probably not even, I don't even think it's the best Redford Newman movie. I mean, that would be Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, I think.
Yep.
And perhaps that's why I think maybe it's like an Abbott and Costello thing. If you like one of their movies or you like an assortment of their movies, there's a sort of general feeling of goodwill towards everything they do. And if you go, well, maybe I didn't love The Sting, but it's them on screen and they're charming, aren't they? And look at their back and forth and that's great. But if in the cold, hard light of day, maybe you like... Not very good.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of people don't like the fact that I think it won Best Picture that year, and a lot it often shows up on lists of films that didn't deserve to win Best Picture, like that kind of thing. Anyway, but I think for me, what I want from a twist is say Matchstick Men.
Yes,
you've seen Matchstick Men.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it because I don't think a lot of people saw the film. Mm. I know people would have gone see Matchstick Men instead of Sting 2.
But they were regular men, it turned out, at the end.
Yes.
They weren't made of wood and phosphates.
Yep. Yeah. One of them was a redhead.
Yes.
But the twist in the end of that is devastating.
Mm.
And when you discover how the scam is working and how the machinations of everything plays out, it's utterly devastating.
Mm.
And it really means something because it changes how you perceive the characters and how they perceive themselves.
Mm.
When you find out that in The Sting that they knew what they were doing the whole time. It's like, they're slightly better con artists than I thought.
That's right.
That the plot of The Sting is essentially there's Lonergan kills a friend of Johnny Hooker, and so he goes and hooks up with... I'm trying to get their names right now. He hooks up with Fargo Gondorf, and they basically then scam Lonergan, taking him for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's right.
And walk away. And then this film opens with Lonergan wanting sweet revenge.
That's right.
And so he starts by killing their beloved best friend in the whole world, Kid Colors, a character that you barely see.
That's right.
It's still an actor got a credit for the role, despite the fact I'm pretty sure it's just a dead body being pulled out and thrown into the boot of a car.
Oh, my God. He probably never had to work again after that.
No, yeah. Thank God. Got Sting 2 money.
Oh, my God, back in the day.
So, and he's not in the first film either, so he just literally appears, but we care very much.
Yes.
And so the now Jake Hooker decides this isn't good enough. We've got to now get revenge for this murder. But the setup that Lonergan has put into place is Lonergan kills him and then spreads word that it was another guy, another underworld criminal. What's his name?
Makalinsky.
Makalinsky. So it's pretty much exactly the same setup as The Sting.
Yes.
Except we know from the start that the con artists are trying to get revenge on the wrong person.
Right.
Makalinsky. And so from the get-go, it's the con artists on the back foot.
Yes,
And we kind of feel like, they're not in control. They're not in charge. There's this sword of Damocles over their head. This is, it's not fun to watch them pull the scam knowing that it's going to come back and bite them.
Mm. But that's wonderful tension, is it not?
No, didn't. Then. Did you find it wonderful tension?
Look, my favorite part of the entire affair was that the If I can be positive about, you know, the cast, which, who I thought was great, as I mentioned, I think the low point of this movie is the scam itself, in which Mac Davis, Jake Hooker, has to pretend to be a boxer.
Yeah.
He has to pretend to be like a, like, you know, a Golden Gloves champion, for, you know, former, who has to be a professional boxer.
Yeah.
Having recently seen the new Creed movie. You can't just pretend to be a boxer and hope to get away with it. It is madness. Maybe you could back in the day.
Yeah.
Maybe you could in an era where you know, professional boxers were just people who jumped off the back of a train in a new town and decided to take their shirt off and.
Well, that did exist. I mean, that was a thing. You know, the Australian outback was full of boxing tents where people would show up and just have a bit of, you know, they would show up and have a fight. And
sometimes
I would beat the, you know, the champion and just be some random guy strapped on the glove. So maybe that is the case. But they try and create some comedy from this. The scam is, we're going to set up Milinski to bet on the wrong person.
Yes.
We're going to get him to try and, we're going to create the impression that Matt King is really good when he's not. And then we're going to get Milinski to bet on him.
Uh-huh.
And then Hooker's going to throw the fight.
Yep.
He's going to lose, and then they'll take his money.
Yes.
Which is essentially what happened in the first film.
Yeah.
Trick someone into betting on the wrong thing.
Is it a reverse white men can't jump? Let me think. Or is it just a regular white men can't jump?
What is a reverse white man? Black men can walk.
That's exactly right. Let me think. But surely the better scam would be to convince him that Hooker is going to lose and then have him win, because he looks like a guy who's going to lose.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right, yeah. And you have two boxers who are, both boxers are, spoiler alert, in on it.
Yes.
And so you can really decide who you're going to bet on.
Uh-huh.
So clearly you just set it up to, you know, make it look like this guy's going to lose because he's not very good, because he's a pudgy, out of shape, middle-aged man. It looked, I mean, watching him bouncing around with no shirt on, it kind of like, oh, that's what I look like at the gym. That's what I look like at this. And it doesn't help that Mac King is playing that for comedy. In order to make us care about the fact that, gosh, they've got to try and pull this scam off and he hasn't boxed in years and he's out of shape and he's not sure what he's doing. He's huffing and puffing and looking really nervous, which of course makes him a terrible, terrible. He is a terrible con artist. Every time he lies, he rolls his eyes and they dart back and forth and he's like, it's my mother's necklace. Oh, and everyone believes this awful lies that he tells. He's an awful, awful liar. Do you think, one character we haven't mentioned, sorry, that I just realized for good reason is Terry Garr's character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why we haven't mentioned her is that she has absolutely no bearing on the plot in any way.
That's true. She's a sort of a small timer. Con artist. She's sweeping through town and doing little cons and getting other people to pay the check at restaurants and so forth. But she has the misfortune to cross paths with Jake and Fargo, and then they're like, oh, we need a dame for this. We need a dame for this heist. So let's get this one in and. Yeah, she's there, isn't she? I think she's charming. I think she's
very charming. Yeah, but she doesn't do anything or have any real impact on the story in any way, which is just infuriating. I kept waiting for her to do something, and nothing ever happens.
Mm.
It does feel like they wanted this to be funnier than the first film.
Yes,
that they were going for a lot of jokes,
but
because you open with a brutal murder, and you also have a few homophobic and racial slurs scattered throughout the film at various points. That then the humor, the quite broad, often slapstick humor, does feel very like it belongs in a very different movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
Some of it reminded me a bit of the Jodie Foster Kids as Gangster movie.
Oh right, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about, but my goodness,
And Scott Baio is in it as well. I'm not Little Rascals. What is it called? Bugsy Malone.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Yes, it felt like Bugsy Malone, a lot of it.
Yeah, with little kids attempting to be gangsters.
Yeah, while also making awful racial slurs.
And the murder we mentioned from earlier, yes.
Yeah. There is a point at which there's a cop and he's trying to catch Jake, who's escaped out of a diner, and uh-huh. he's falling into cream pies and slipping on the floor as he tries to get up, but at the same time is hurling racial epithets out the door at yeah. him while slipping over on
him.
Oh,
my God, yes.
And it feels like, I'm not sure who is this for? Who are we aiming this at? Because it feels like you're trying to have fun, but it's not fun.
I mean, maybe some people were rolling in the aisles at the original screening of this. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah. There is also an entire scene in a boxing ring mm-hmm. in which they tell all of the boxers, they trick all the boxers into leaving by telling them they're going to be photographed in Life magazine.
That's right.
And then they sweep in, at which point Jake Hooker has to win a boxing match.
Against a real contender.
A real contender.
One of our Mark's actual boys, one of his boxing boys.
Yeah.
And so they do this by giving him a poisoned mouth guard Jake has to prove his mettle against this real boxer to make the Mark think that he has a shot at the title. And this Mark is like, well, we'll see if this guy's any good. And of course he's not. So the way we're going to convince our man that he is a real boxer is to get his henchman in the ring, poison his mouth guard with some sort of cyanide or arsenic based.
I thought chloroform.
Something like
that.
It was chloroform. Yeah. That's right. And then just wait for that to take effect, and then just have Jake lay into him until he's been knocked out.
It works, though.
It works.
But the timing needs to be... He needs to throw some punches and the guy needs to... And in fact, the boxer says, hey, you know, I was dizzy before I even threw a punch. I think he points out, no, that wasn't right.
That's right. Yeah,
I know the difference between being punched in the face and drugged. And he's dismissed out of hand.
That's right, yeah.
And that's some of that Ocean's 8 sort of fuzzy logic that we're expected to sort of just go along with it, expected to believe that the con artist is able to do that. That is something that is often a problem with con artist movies, is that a good con artist can convince people to do anything.
Right, uh-huh.
And because you're a screenwriter, you can come up with any sort of argument or any sort of persuasive piece of dialogue that you like.
That's
because
true.
You're writing the other half of the dialogue, you can go, oh, that con artist's good. The person believed what they're saying.
Mm.
And, you know, like, what would have happened if the guy in the boxing gym didn't want his photograph in...
Life magazine, exactly. Yeah, what if they were like, no, we'll stay right here, quite frankly. We're here for the boxing. We are not here for the showmanship, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Or if the henchman was like, no, I won't use the house mouth guard. I'll use my own mouth guard.
Thank you very
much. I like a pristine mouth guard. Thank you. I've brought my own.
Yeah. Who would have thought someone wouldn't want to put a communal mouth guard in their mouth? And that's the problem, though, like with those movies, is that we just said, oh, well, they're good at their job because they convinced this person.
Yeah.
And we're
this idiot.
This idiot.
And you'd surely, if you're someone who wants to bet on boxing, maybe you'd know a little bit about boxing. Maybe you'd watch this debacle of a match and go, it looks like this guy's got jelly arms and he doesn't know how to punch.
Yeah.
And then he just He hasn't come out of the out of the gate swinging. He's just sort of cowering against the might of my guy. And then all of a sudden, two things happen. One, my guy gets woozy for no reason, despite the fact that he's not had a hand laid on him even once. And then this guy I've just met and who has no boxing history is suddenly laying him out.
And yet. I don't know. In other films, though, I totally just accept that.
Right.
And go, yep, sure. Okay, that's the reality of this. But in this, it really feels like, oh, we're watching a movie. We're watching people playing,
right.
like playing make-believe as it goes on. But Milinski, he is convinced.
Yes.
He thinks, yes, this is all on the up and up. I'm going to bet hundreds of thousands of dollars on Jake Hooker to win this.
To lose, that's right.
Yeah, I'm gonna bet on this because he's going to... Mm. It's going to be great. And we're going to make all this money.
Yeah. And he's good, but he's not that good. I think he's going to lose. I think those jelly arms are going to fall apart in the ninth or tenth round, I think.
Yeah, that's all right. But just as the match starts, so the bet has been made. Mm-hmm. And the bet is made with the con artist.
Yes.
So he doesn't make it to a third party. He makes it with the con artist themselves.
So they could just leave.
They could just leave at that point. It's made several hours, if not days, beforehand. Mm. So they could just walk off with the money and say, so long, guys.
Yeah.
But they decide, no, we're gonna see it through. The theory, you know, if the scam was going to play out the way we think it is, the theory, I guess, was that, well, we don't want him to know that he's been scammed.
Uh-huh, sure.
But that's not the case at all, because there's now another twist as well. And so, because at this point, Lonergan, Oliver Reed, who's been sort of scuttling around doing little bits of comedy in the background the whole film, shows up and tells Malinsky, hey, guess what? You've been scammed. You bet on the wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Malinsky, in the middle of the boxing match, leaps up, leaves the boxing ring, goes across town, breaks into the, kicks down the door of the...
The fake bookie's office.
The fake bookie's office. And at gunpoint says, I want to change my bet. And they say, you can't change your bet. And he says, well, I've got a gun.
Yeah. Which is a crime.
It is a crime. That's how
and,
you know
and
it's
And every, everything was above board until then. But then someone commits a crime. And I think that's a step too far, I think.
They've gone too far this time. But that's the problem is, like, again, he's got a gun.
Yes.
He's saying, he doesn't say, give me my money back.
Yeah.
And you know what? Give me all the money in the safe.
That's
because
right.
You're trying to scam me.
Yeah.
He says, no, I want to change my bet so that I'm going to win this, what I now know to be fraudulent bet.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, at gunpoint.
Yeah. Now that I've switched my bet, I know that everything is above board.
Yes.
And I think.
Yeah.
I think things are going to turn my way this time, but I will leave my money in your hands.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
I'm going to leave the money here. I'm not going to take my money with me for safekeeping just in case. I'm going to leave it with you because I'm a man of honor with a gun.
That's right.
And then I'm going to... So they then head back to the boxing ring, at which point Gondorf tells Jake, hey, look, he swapped his bet. You've got to win the match.
Otherwise, we're ruined.
Otherwise, we're ruined. It's all over. We're going to be killed. It's life and death.
Yeah. We don't have any more poison mouth guards to distribute, so we can't help you there. You're going to have to win for real.
Yeah. And so he gets up and they have a big fight, a big boxing match, which is an awfully shot boxing match. I have not seen the latest Creed film, but as someone who's seen Creed 3 and also seen The
In
Sting
the same
2,
week, possibly.
In
I
the
think.
Same week. Which, how did they go with the editing and the depiction of boxing?
Well, Creed 3 is I mean, it's shot very well, obviously, but it's also, it's directed by Michael B. Jordan, who also plays Creed. It's his directorial debut. And Michael B. Jordan is a famously a big anime fan. So there are a lot of sort of anime-themed shots that are sort of drawn from, like, directly from like Dragon Ball Z or from Naruto or what have you. So it's very well shot, but I think if you're looking for, like, absolute realism, probably the previous two. But there are some. It looks good.
But it sounds interesting.
Oh, it's interesting. Sure.
It's not wide shot. No. Extreme close up where you can't see what's happening. Wide shot. Extreme close up where you can't see what's happening. It does. I got bored during. And he's going, you've just got to last three more rounds. And it's like, oh God,
oh,
really?
God.
I don't know if I can do it. I don't know. Cut me. I can't last. But he does it. He succeeds.
Yes.
He's the guy goes down despite being 20 years younger and
That's right.
you know, twice his size and extraordinarily fit and an actual boxer.
Yeah.
He goes down. He can't believe it. He's won. And you know, that means they now get to walk away with the money that they, like, because Malinsky's going to honor the debt and not come after
not
him.
Not with that gun of his from
with
earlier.
With a gun. He's like, and he realized I've pointed the gun at the wrong person. It's this Lonergan guy.
That's right.
He's the one, so I'm going to go after him. And they have an altercation, and the implication is Malinsky kills Lonergan in the back of a car. But it's done in a wacky way because they sort of goes, you know, jumps into the car with all the thugs all jump into Lonergan's car out the front of the boxing match, and then the car starts sort of shaking back and forth like a comedy fight's going on. But it's like, oh, that man's probably dead now.
Yeah, he's been, they've slit his throat.
They've slit his throat in the backseat.
All the bumping about is people avoiding the jet, the arterial spray.
Yeah, and the I they probably shot it and just didn't show it, but they were probably then trying to get up, and then they kept slipping over that's in the blood,
right.
And,
yeah.
And screaming racial slurs at each other.
That's
and,
right.
slipping around in the blood in the backseat of the car. Big laughs.
Yeah.
So at that point, it feels like, oh, the scam has worked, but they just had to make some last minute changes and he had to actually win the boxing match.
That's right, yes.
And then we discover...
Which is impossible. Have you seen him?
Yeah, exactly. And it's this point that we get our twist. So after the scam has already been pulled off, we get our big twist, which is that Gondorf knew from the beginning that Lonergan was after him. Mm-hmm. And that's because he already knew... Veronica.
Yes, that's right. Terry Garr's character. Yes,
Terry Garr's character. Knew her and sent her to infiltrate Lonergan's operation. Found out that this was going to happen. Didn't stop the murder of Kid Colors.
That's right.
Didn't have
their beautiful friend. Colors.
Oh, no. And so then they set this whole thing up as a scam to try and get to get Oliver Reed.
Yes.
And they knew that Malinsky was innocent and not involved and was being used as a pawn, but still scammed him anyway.
That's right.
He was a nasty guy.
Yeah.
And then
get him to do another murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we find out that Matt King didn't win the boxing match, that he would been lied to and had been lied to for the whole film.
The Jackie Gleason had paid off the real boxer to take the fall,
yeah.
In the end, to run through 12 rounds or whatever it is, and then just
collapse.
And surely the dent to your reputation and the loss of the prize money is more than whatever you're being paid by Jackie Gleason, right?
Yeah, I would assume so. I feel like normally when they have a rigged boxing match, you want to try and keep their reputation intact. You don't want to have them lose to a loser. Yeah. But the thing is, there's absolutely no reason for Gondorf to keep any of this information from Hooker.
Yeah,
there's no reason. And in fact, it's not in his best interests to do that.
Because especially in that boxing match, you might give up. You might give up. If Jackie Gleason told him, hey, in round 10, he's going to take a fall, so just make it look good for 10 rounds.
Mm.
But instead, he's like, you got to win. This guy is going to beat you into the ground and you better win. You might go 6 rounds and be like, I physically cannot do this anymore. Yeah. You know? Maybe tell him then. Maybe like just play it out. The guy's going to drop. Just make it look good.
It shows absolutely no faith in him as a con artist.
Yeah.
To say, no, I've got it. The only way I can do this is to scam you so you give a realistic performance.
And the modern day instinct, I think, is to, after you've watched one of these movies, once the twists have been revealed, is to then go back to the start and rewatch again and say, okay, where were the clues to reveal to me what was going on? With that knowledge, can I go back and go, okay, well, I see where they've set that in motion. I see where they've set that in motion. There's a little cut and we know that a secret thing is happening behind the scenes there or what have you.
Yeah.
But guess what? I couldn't be bothered.
Yes, I really don't care. Yeah. I think that if we did go back and did that, it would be much like Now You See Me, where... There are things that make absolutely no sense. People in character when they have no reason to be in character.
That's
people
right, exactly, yes.
Telling lies they have no business telling.
Exactly. But mugging for the audience that they know is there, but they shouldn't know is there, you know.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then the big final twist, the one we're supposed to care the most about, is that so Hooker and Veronique, is that her name? I've forgotten. I keep saying Veronique and sound like that's not a name.
I think it might be Veronica, but that's...
But it's spelt Veronique everywhere. Oh. So maybe I'll just, I'll need to check. I'm going to have to watch the movie again.
That's right.
Let's just call her Veronica so I can stop saying
Veronica. See, what's happened here is the one person who's done the IMDb trivia.
Yeah.
The one person who's watched this and has done that. Has had no pushback. So maybe you could start a rivalry with this guy. You should be like, no, it's Veronica. I've watched it twice. And they'll be like, well, that's more than I have. So,
you know, your podcast has ruined IMDb trivia for me.
Because it's all lies?
Because,
it's just some guy.
Every single time you say we've got some IMDb trivia, you point out that it's just some guy and that it's not true and we can't believe anything. And I've really enjoyed my IMDb trivia until you came along and ruined it for me.
Well, it's not what it's for. It's not for enjoying things. It's for learning a thing and then someone says, hey, you know this fact? And you're like, yes, I do know that fact. I know all the facts. Thank you. It's what being a nerd is all about, just knowing a fact and regurgitating it.
It is Veronica. It's okay. Veronica on IMDb. I'm just wrong. Do you know what? I think maybe she's Count Veronique.
She might be Count Veronique. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the big twist we have then about Veronica is that her and Hooker have got a romance going.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that she's Gondorf's daughter.
Yes.
And he waves goodbye, a little wink on the train, like, gonna go have sex with my daughter now.
That's right.
Good luck. Mm. I almost like I did that, like all part of my scam.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
To set up my daughter with this.
I've pimped her out.
Pimped her out. Like,
to a guy I know.
Yeah.
Who's maybe my age.
Yeah.
And she's quite young.
Yes.
Ugh.
And it's just, and that's the end of the film. And,
yeah.
And it does, it leaves you just, as you said, like no desire to watch it again, to think about how it works or if it works.
Yeah.
But to sort of erase it, just to completely ignore it. It did feel like a straight to DVD. What are they like a Mockbuster?
You know, like, oh, sure, like a Sharknado.
Yeah,
for example.
Yeah, or like Transmorphers.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, or the War of the World. You know, where they made War of the Worlds 2 Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
The Stinger, they might call it.
That's right. Well, that's what it felt like. It felt like they had, you know, we'll cover these characters and they look vaguely, you know, it feels vaguely similar, same sort of music.
That's right.
And but we'll just change the characters' names and no one will notice. And that's really, it did feel like a poorly thought out, very, very quickly made rip-off instead of a 10 years in the making.
That's right.
Sequel by the person who made the original film.
Yeah. I think it was originally going to be called Another Sting. Perhaps some. Unless that's IMDb trivia, in which case, who's to say?
Well, I think it was something like that, or a Second Sting or
that's
something.
That's right, yes.
And I think they went, no, we'll just... Because that was the time in which, no, when you make a second movie, it was sort of, the 80s. The 80s. Was a time in which, no, when you make Rocky and then you make Rocky 2.
That's right. Even rockier.
You can give it, you can have a subtitle, but it's got to be
that's
Rocky,
right.
Rocky 2. Do you know what it is? They made First Blood.
Yes.
And then they made
Rambo.
Rambo, First Blood.
Part 2.
Part 2.
Yeah.
Two and that's people right. got so confused.
Yes.
And then Rambo
right.
3 came out and people said, hang on, I haven't seen Rambo 1.
That's right.
And I think maybe that confused people so much that everyone went, no, you've got
to. Exactly.
The films have got to be 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street, 1, 2, 3, 4. You know.
They released the song Escape and nobody listened to the song Escape. Nobody could find it. And then they're like, we should call it the Pina Colada song. And it became
exactly
a big hit,
right.
And I think that's exactly what you're saying there.
Yep, 100%. They just went, no, we've got to call it the thing that it is.
Do you think they should make another Sting movie?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Because I don't think, I think we've got TV shows like Hustle, Leverage, White Collar.
The Real Hustle.
The Real Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
The Real Hustle Australia.
That's right.
Which I was in.
I know.
And had very few episodes, but it's still, my God, is it in my...
it's in your reel?
It's in my reel.
Yeah,
absolutely,
good. Yeah.
They were like, basically, they told me, they go, yeah, you've got the... we can reuse the same credit. We can reuse the credits from the original, like from the original BBC theory because... And then they stopped.
Uh-huh.
And I go... And they didn't say anything. And I go, uh-huh. Oh, is it because I'm about as fat as the guy who played my role in the British one? And they go, yeah.
Oh,
was like,
oh no.
That was how little effort. It was like, let's cast someone who has the same rough body type as the people who appear in Silhouettes.
Hey, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well.
The thing about a show like Hustle or any Leverage or any of those kind of, surely it's quite difficult to come up with a convincing heist every week. Like a kind of bulletproof heist that makes sense and is entertaining. Like I kind of feel like I would rather than watch several kind of subpar heists a year, I would just love one that is really, really solid, you know?
Yeah. I 100% agree. I think though that those series, I'm not a big fan of those those series. I think that they don't really care very much about the characters.
I see, yes.
And they care all about the inner workings of the scam.
Uh-huh.
But I think those, because we've had now, you know, it's now 40 plus years since The Sting was made. And there's now rules, and there are now, it's like Lego, you know, so these, I've got my little pieces, uh-huh. and I'm going to put this here and this goes here. And then I've got all the different bits that I yes. can put together.
Mm-hmm.
Much, I mean, like an episode of something like, I don't know, like Law and Order.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
You know, like how do they keep coming up with these cases? And it's yes. like, well, they just tell the same stories.
Yeah,
you know.
It's AI now. That's it's how they do it.
Yeah, well,
it's just autocomplete now. Yeah, that's how they do it.
It's autocomplete. Yeah. Mm, you say, yeah. okay, who's our bad guy? What's the terrible thing that they've done so that they deserve it?
Uh-huh.
What's the thing that they've got that's worth lots of money?
Yep.
What's going to be our fake scam? Mm. You know, what's this, and then what's going to be our scam that happens behind the scenes?
That's right.
No uh-huh. one is watching.
Yeah.
And you just... You know, you have everyone be surprised, and you have everyone act as if they didn't know this was coming and look a bit smug, and you say, the end.
Good night. Nice. Yes. Yeah.
But when you do it well, like Nine Queens, which I think is the best con artist film.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
Argentinian con artist film. It was remade as in 2003, I think, as...
The 10 Queens, because it's got to be better. It's got to be one better.
Yeah, that's the sequel. No, as...
1,000 Queens.
That's it.
America.
I think it was just called Criminal.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
And that was remade as... There's so many films. I'm trying to look it up, but there's so many films called Criminal.
There's so many films.
There's too many to just go through them one by one. 2004, Diego Luna and George C. Reilly in Criminal.
Oh.
The original... And the remake is good, but the original is really great because it's set against the backdrop of political upheaval. And you think that that is just in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that, no, that's actually a major part of the story.
Oh.
And when the big twist comes, it changes your relationship with the characters and who you thought they were, and also how you saw them. And
right.
how you're like, oh, gosh, I thought this person was a good guy, but actually maybe they're not a good guy.
Because it turned out the political upheaval was all the part of the scam.
That's it.
It turned out the undemocratically elected dictator, he takes a fall, but it turns out he got paid off with $500.
That's right. And remember the protests in the street where 7 million people took to the street?
Fake. Everything
fake. They're all in on
That's
it.
That's right.
That's actually Mad Magazine in their classic parody of The Sting.
Uh-huh.
At the end it says, well, we made $400,000 on the scam. Unfortunately, it cost just $500,000 yeah. to pull this off. But it's set in Argentina, and so it's a lot of the political unrest that was happening in the late 90s in Argentina are part of the movie.
Interesting, okay.
And which makes you really care about the film and make you go, whoa, hang on. Like, I actually, like, yeah, why was I ignoring all of these awful things that were happening in the background, and actually they're affecting everybody's lives and these people. So, great film. But with this, and with Leverage and with Hustle, at the end you just don't really care very much. Because... The twist is, as I said before, like it's about undoing the tension as opposed to ramping it up again.
That's right.
So that's why I don't want another episode of The Sting. Have you seen the episode of Community about The Sting?
I must have.
It's in the
last
season.
It's probably been some years. Okay, right.
And it's essentially they have a, there is a class on grifting. I think it's called Grifting 101 or Introduction to Grifting. And the grifter, they have a grifting teacher who's going to teach everyone how to grift. And it's played by Matt Berry.
Oh, great. I have not seen that in that case.
He comes in wearing a white suit. And he has a series of names that change throughout. And he's a grifter. And the first thing he does is tell them all they have to go and buy a regulation grifting suitcase from him. And the students all realize they've been grifted by this grifter, and so decide they're going to pull a grift on him. And they say the word grift a lot. They're going to pull a grift on him.
Yeah.
But a big part of it is how they're going to watch The Sting.
Uh-huh.
And they basically watch The Sting and go, well, that was completely useless.
Right.
Don't understand
how
that is possible to do. And the whole, it's basically pointing out how silly a lot of these movies are.
Yeah.
And how they don't really mean anything, and why you're pulling these 120-year-old scams.
Oh my god, you're right. This was silly.
This
movie was very silly.
It was very silly. Anyway, I'm not gonna give you a full blow-by-blow account of an episode of Community as much as I'd like to. But it's great. I think it's like it shows why we don't need to make movies like The Sting.
Wow. So the era of that is over, do you think?
No, of course not. No, they'll keep making those kind of movies. Yeah.
I mean they will, but should they?
Well, actually, this is a question for you. Is with these... Okay, Because you know all about spoilers, you know, like that's, you have to deal with spoilers every day.
Yes, that's right. Boy, do I.
All the time. And, am I going to, I've got to do research for the show. Is this research going to spoil this movie?
Yes, absolutely.
But these types of movies only really work if you don't have information, you don't know
going in
how the film's going to end. If I say, hey, guess what? At the end of Iron Man, everything's okay for Iron Man.
You
kind of go, that's okay, I can still watch Iron Man.
That's right.
Exactly. But if I say,
I don't know. I've received some tweets that are like, look, my favorite tweet I've ever received, I watched a movie. I think it might have been the movie Palm Springs, which I don't know if it's got Andy Samberg and Krista Milotti in it.
Yep.
And
it's the Groundhog Day.
Well, see, that's the thing. I simply said on a podcast, I said, look, I don't want to say too much about this movie, but I thought it was a delightful movie, and I think people will be talking about it in a few weeks, you know, when it has a full cinema release. So I think you should probably, you know, watch it. I think you'll have a great time. And then a few days later, I woke up and checked Twitter, and there was a Twitter thread starting with a tweet towards me saying, well, no thanks for the spoilers there. And somebody had replied, what about that, what he said was a spoiler? And he said, well, I listen to his podcast and I know what kind of movies he likes. And the fact that he said he liked this told me about what kind of a movie it was. And that's a spoiler. So
you didn't even mention that it was like Groundhog Day.
No.
You just said
I liked it. Yeah.
And so from that, he was able to determine that it was probably a twisty-turny science
fiction. He extrapolated. Thing. Yeah. And that's a spoiler now.
Right.
That's the.
Wow.
That's the.
I mean, the. The description of the film Palm Springs is stuck in a time loop, two wedding guests develop a budding romance while living the same day over and over again.
Correct, yes.
Okay. So, I think I said
don't look if it sounds good, don't look it up, don't watch the trailer. Just if you see it somewhere you should watch it.
Yeah.
And I think they've looked it up.
Right.
And seen the spoiler, and that's my fault.
That's your fault.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that's where we're at,
yes,
I think it's really hard to make these types of twisty con artist movies.
It absolutely
now,
is, yes.
Particularly ones that don't really survive a rewatching, like watching The Sting again and going, oh, yeah, well, these people are in it. Yeah, I don't care anymore.
Right.
There's no tension. Mm. Nothing means anything.
Yeah.
It's all theater within theater. Who gives a shit?
That's true. That's what it says in the poster.
That's it. Theater within theater. Who gives a shit? that if you know the ending of the film,
yeah,
then
I think we're in it for the charisma of the leads, probably, or like even you know, individual scenes. I think personally, I'm in it for, you know, just a good chemistry between characters. I think even if I know where it's going. That's why I like the first Ocean's movie. Not the first Ocean's movie. That one's garbage.
Yeah.
The Sinatra one. That one's no good. That's awful.
Could I
say, the Soderbergh,
highly recommend, you did it on Caravan and Garbage.
We did a video on it. Yeah,
there's a video on YouTube.
Oh boy.
Ocean's, Caravan of Garbage.
The original Ocean's 11 with the Rat Pack. Just a bunch of drunken 50-year-old men wandering around a soundstage. Yeah. Oh boy!
My favorite bit is you stop making jokes about halfway through and just start getting annoyed at these long dead movie stars.
Oh my god!
So,
but the first Soderbergh one is the Clooney, Pitt, Damon, all those guys. It's a good rapport between all those guys.
Yeah,
and I think that's the appeal for me. I think.
But is that enough though to carry that kind of movie through? If you know, I mean, they're going to probably get away with it. In the end. But that's not really the twist. The twist is the second vault and the...
That's right.
And also the fact that, he's actually a big part of this scam is him trying to get Tess back. I can't remember. Remember her name?
Yeah, there you go.
There again, she's trying to win Tess back.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not just about getting the money. It's about putting... I can't remember the actor's name. The bad guy.
Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia. His character in a position where he has to choose between...
Money and love.
The money and love, knowing that he's going to choose the money, which is great. And that's a great character. That's better than the than the double safe.
That's right.
Twist, which is cool. But the moment of like, oh, shit, this guy, this is like, he's showing that this, he's got to choose between the girl and the money.
Mm-hmm.
And, or not even the girl and the money. I think it's actually the girl and like sticking it to George Clooney.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And he chooses to stick it to you know. Yeah, he chooses that over the girl. He sacrifices.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, a lot of the time with movies, it's about the mood I'm in at the time. Mm-hmm. I'll give a pass to a 3-star superhero movie if I go, you know what, I want some quippy one-liners and I want a fun action sequence or what have you. But sometimes I'll watch that exact same movie and go, oh, this was garbage. This was terrible. This didn't raise the form. This didn't, you know, reinvent the wheel here. It was just nothing. But
yeah.
And I think I suppose for me heist movies, like, I didn't hate The Sting 2. I'm sure I should have.
Mm.
But I'm like, everybody's pretty charming. I liked seeing Oliver Reed in this. I liked the costuming. I thought the costuming was good.
I think my disdain for the film comes from its disrespect for the first film.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And its disrespect for the genre of con artist film.
Uh-huh.
And its racial slurs.
Oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah.
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 But, you know, like, if you get pleasure from racial slurs...
I don't. Okay. I want to be clear. Right. I don't.
That wasn't a part of the film that you enjoyed, that no. You found charming. Okay, mm. Fair enough. Are you familiar with the genre of... because this is a subgenre of con artist film.
Okay.
You called it a heist film at the beginning. I didn't want to correct you. So.
I see, all right. Also, there have been listeners to this thinking I'm a fool for this entire podcast.
Probably just me, to be honest.
All right, good.
But so you have heist films as the overarching
yes.
genre.
Uh-huh.
And then the con artist film is a subgenre
okay, sure.
of the heist film.
Because a heist could include a bank robbery, for example,
exactly,
I suppose. Yes.
Yeah, Ocean's 11 I don't see as really a con artist film, but it's definitely... It's got yeah. enough deception going on.
You're right. There's not a lot of conning. There's a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Matt Damon pretends to be the inspector. He's some sort of casino inspector.
That's in the third one.
Is it?
With the big nose?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Big Nose and Ellen Barkin. Yeah, okay, that's in Ocean's 13. Oh, I had to count. Too. I had to go left or 13 in my head to remember the name.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, there's that, but it is ultimately stealing the money.
That's
the
right.
idea of a good con artist movie is that they hand over the money.
Yeah,
or
right.
hand over the information in that had they made a better decision, they wouldn't have gotten scammed.
Right, uh-huh.
And
yeah, yeah.
in the Ocean's movie, it's sort of like, well, the money's been taken
that's true.
Away. So, but that's a pretty quibbly. Anyway, so you have these heist movies and then con artist movies.
Uh-huh.
And then you have subgenres of con artist movie. You have sort of the gambling con artist movie.
Sure, yeah.
You have the short con movie, the sort of road trip ones like Paper Moon. And this is the boxing con artist movie.
Oh, it's got its own subcategory.
Its own little subcategory of boxing. And they're not usually twisty-turny films because there is only one real boxing scam, which is the match is fixed.
Yes, right.
You know,
of course,
it.
Yes.
It's either fixed or it's
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
And in this, they say we're going to fix a match, but we're not going to fix it in the way you think.
Yeah.
And so it's all
the boxer's tapping out some Morse code with his feet and his fists.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and often they are films that are also another type of film as well. So
right.
it might be a thriller and a boxing con artist. You know, they're never just they're never like the Sting 2, I think, is probably the only one that is. Really, the is the major point of the movie.
In a class of its own, I agree.
Sure.
What's another boxing con? I guess
okay. I've got a list here.
Okay.
Hang on. So Digstown is a famous... I was going to say famous. It's not a famous movie. No one has ever heard of it. It has like 3 or 4 different names.
Okay.
It's a James Woods film from the 80s in which he gets out of jail and he... one of his friends has basically made a bet that... he's got that their boxer will beat 10 of Digstown's best boxers.
Oh, I see.
And so there's a series, one after the other, of
okay.
delightful scams and hijinks as they try and sort of win these 10 matches in a row. With,
right.
I think it's Louis Gossett Jr. as the
yeah, of course, right.
As the boxer.
Yeah, yeah.
Just going, you know,
round the Iron Eagle himself.
Yes.
Just so it's not 10 poisoned mouth guards. It's
no.
10 different.
Ten different things happen in different ways, and some of it's real boxing, and some of it's not. And nothing is certain.
Okay,
and that's kind of part of it is: well, are they going to get away? Are they going to not? And there's a nice little twist in the end that is not. It's not clever, but it just It's not clever.
We hit the last guy in the head with a shovel.
Yeah. But it's the shovel from the first
scene.
Yeah,
of course.
The whole time. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And the shovel has Rosebud written on
it.
And
that's
then you
right.
get it from the first scene. And so there's Rigged. That's a gritty That's a seedy underground of illegal prize fighting. A corrupt boxing promoter is embroiled in a dangerous fight-fixing scheme with his female prize fighter.
Oh.
And that one's just wants to be gritty and edgy, and everything is super high stakes and people might die the whole time, and it's not a lot of fun, to be honest.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it's very much a boxing movie.
Yeah.
In which the stakes are made higher by the fact that there are criminals and con artists everywhere. Mm,
I feel like the essential element of a heist movie is fun.
Yes.
You know, if it's not fun, walk away. It should be the same rule with gambling, I think.
I mean, it's literally called a caper.
That's true.
It should be
a little bit of fun.
Enjoyable.
I'm sure I have enjoyed a gritty, you know, high stakes heist or a con that, you know, is very tense and so forth. But when I think of heist movie, I think, you know, they're getting away with the end. They're in an open top convertible at the end. They're driving away. There's money flying out the back of the bags, you know?
Yeah. Mm. That's sort of the difference between David Mamet's Heist, mm-hmm. which is a lot of fun and is just a straight heist movie.
Uh-huh.
And then David Mamet's House of Games, which is a film about con artists. And it's got a bit of a twist in the middle,
uh-huh.
but then the rest of it is just very, it's about the psychology of being a victim,
oh.
and how it feels to be a victim, and no. how a victim can, of that kind of crime,
yeah, right.
can get...
Get some catharsis,
right. and what you have to do to get over that.
Okay,
and so it's
just get over it.
Just get over it. Get
on.
Over it. Come
God.
On. Just get over it.
Chin
Mamet.
Up, mate. Come
yeah.
on.
It's David Mamet. Yeah, come on.
It'll never happen.
Yeah. Or Spanish Prisoner. That's another one that's a bit of a caper. That's a very uneven film because it's a very fun story, but no one in the film is having fun.
Ah.
Even Steve Martin is not having fun. Snatch. So Snatch is.
Oh, I love Snatch.
Yeah. That's a crime film, but it is people faking boxing matches and rigging matches and who is going to swindle who and twists
That's
and
right.
turns and diamonds and all of those films.
Mm.
Snake Eyes, the Brian De Palma's Snake Eyes.
Of course, with Nicolas Cage, yeah.
Nicolas Cage, he investigates. I haven't seen this in years. All I remember is that they have an opening shot of the film is Nick Cage is walking around a boxing match and it's all shot in a single... It's all shot in a single. It's a single shot.
It's a single shot.
It's all shot in a single shot. Thank
nice.
You.
Nice.
But it's all. It has been. I think it's not really one of those single.
Sure.
Shots.
Yeah. Yeah.
A
yeah.
Single
yeah.
Shot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and it ends with a very, very long shot zooming in on some construction work, and at the end there's a block of cement, and the block of cement has got a ring in it, which meant something to the film, but I've forgotten what it is. But I stayed in the cinema.
Terrific.
Just watching this single shot of nothing happening because I wanted to find out where this was going.
Yeah,
and it
right.
turned out it was nowhere.
Mm.
Harlem Nights is another one. And that's sort of, again, that's a 1930s New York City
that's
casino.
Right. Is that Denzel Washington? Is he in that?
I think so, yeah. I have not seen that in many, many years. Like literally, I think I saw that when I was a teenager. And I remember feeling like I was perhaps too young to be watching it. I've looked it up. It's Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor and Red Fox. But it's that's a film that is a bit gritty, but it's still quite fun, and it's illegal gambling and all, you know.
We love and endorse illegal gambling over here on Scammapalooza.
Well, not like legal gambling. I'm going to come out and say it. Illegal gambling is better for society than legal gambling.
Wow,
I've said it. Illegal gambling, at least you know that it's. Probably a scam, whereas right. legal gambling.
Yep, that's true. The guy in the back alley while you're rolling dice, he isn't offering you bonus bets.
Yeah,
you absolutely know will not win you your money back.
That's right. Yeah, and you probably. I feel like the odds are better with illegal. I want to know if someone has done a study on this, but if I go to Crown Casino and play blackjack there versus going and playing blackjack at a underground, seedy underground. Casino.
Yeah.
I said underground twice. That's underground.
Doubly underground.
Doubly
two
underground.
Two layers of underground.
That I'm going to do better there.
Probably.
Yeah.
They'd have fewer decks of cards, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, it depends. So if you only have one deck of cards, which is very rare, then it can be quite easy to win.
Yes.
Because you can watch and go, oh, hang on, we're almost at the end of the deck. And
right,
there's no aces have been played. I'm going to bet more money.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the more cards you have, then
The harder it is, yeah.
The harder it becomes. Mm. I just recorded an episode with Stephen Bridges, who is a YouTuber who decided he wanted to learn how to count cards.
Oh.
And then did, and then was quite successful at it. And then made a series of videos, but then didn't release them. Just kept made a video and goes, oh, no, that's too good. I don't want to release this.
Oh, because people will learn. Oh, people will know what I'm up to.
Yeah.
Is card counting technically illegal?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. No way is it illegal. And it's been proven in court multiple times. Because it's the way Stephen described it is that I think by the time people will have listened to it by the time this comes out, that basically he said that, like, name a game in which it's against the rules to use your brain.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
Because that's all you're doing. You're using information that everyone has. You're using your brain to win. You're following all of the rules that they've set. You're just good at it.
Right,
And that's the problem they have.
Yeah.
Good at it.
Yeah, I remember there was a kerfuffle. This isn't related to the Sting too, but that's in a way. There was a kerfuffle quite a couple of months ago, a female poker player who I think was quite new to the game. She won a huge hand in a televised or a streamed match. Because she bluffed and she won, and people are like, how dare she bluff as part of the rules.
Yeah. And that's I think the problem is that people have an idea of how a game is supposed to go and what the rules are supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then when people do things that go against their kind of head canon of what the rules are, they get very upset.
I've seen people, not that I go to the casino a lot, but people getting mad at a blackjack table because the person next to them drew another card or something, and it's like, you're ruining my cards.
Yeah, well, he talks about that.
Yeah.
He talked about how people see blackjack as a team sport.
Right.
And that somehow the cards have been shuffled, and then the cards are now, you have your cards that are meant for you.
Sure, right.
And if somebody hits when they're not supposed, you know, hits at the wrong moment or sits at the wrong moment.
Yeah. You're not getting the cards you wanted.
The cards that you were deigned to
get. Yes, right.
And so they get very upset. Very upset and decide that, yeah. But no, card counting's not at all illegal. Which, if you'd watched the terrible movie 21, you would know.
I have not seen that.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen The Card Counter, that Paul Schrader movie.
Oh, is that good? Oh, wait, is that good?
I liked it. It's Oscar Isaac. It's pretty good.
Is it one of those movies that you think is going to be about gambling, but then it's actually about the human condition?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and war crimes.
Like The Gambler. Or there's one with William H. Macy and Alec Baldwin, The Cooler.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where it turns out it's actually just about the human condition.
Wow.
And you get furious.
makes you think.
Boo. Yeah. More gambling.
Show more of the cards. Show exactly how the cards are dealt. Boo.
Roll the dice in slow motion. Mm. Boo. Yeah, exactly. Brilliant. All right. Do you have any final thoughts on The Sting 2?
I didn't hate it.
You
did? I probably should have. But my movie tastes have skewed so far to the weird at this point, I think. I think it's watching so many movies sort of over the last 10 years. But some people have described my movie taste at this point as inexplicable. So,
what does it take for you not to enjoy a movie? Like, what?
It's impossible to say.
I like that though. That's good. I think I think too often we say, this is what I like.
Yeah.
And then we go to movies that we like and we say, yes, I liked that.
Yeah.
Because it gave me what I expected and what I told myself I like.
Mm.
And these are films I don't like.
Yes.
And I won't enjoy them because they don't do things.
I've gotten better at just enjoying elements of a movie, even if I don't like the movie as a whole.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, well, I did like the costume and I like the casting and et cetera, but the plot fell into the toilet very quickly. And I think I'm okay with that. But I think the internet as a whole has decided that, no, a movie is either the best movie ever or the worst movie ever.
Yeah.
And you cannot possibly dredge some good stuff out of a bad movie or find anything to criticize about a good movie. There's no in-between. But really, there is an in-between.
Well, and that is something I enjoy about the podcast, about Mr. Sunday Movies, is whether you liked the movie or not, unless it's extreme,
yes,
those, you know, unless it's an original Ocean's 11, that you're much more interested in talking about little bits that worked or didn't work, or where does it sit compared with other movies, or who is this film for, or what's the history, or how did that happen. I think that's much more interesting than deciding.
I think so too.
Yeah. You know what I want from a film is I want to be surprised.
Uh-huh.
which is why I like con artist movies so much.
Right. But
the problem
right.
is I've seen so many of them.
The formula is ingrained into your brain now. Yeah?
Yes, and mm-hmm. I'm rarely surprised.
Okay, maybe you could switch genres.
Yes.
Maybe you could become a different guy.
I will.
Yeah.
All right. I'll become the Nick Mason of film.
Great. I love that. It's not Taken, so it's fine.
Excellent. I'm going to plug your podcast.
We have a podcast called The Weekly Planet, where we talk about movies and TV shows and comic books with a sort of a heavy slant towards superhero stuff. But how long's that going to last? When's the bubble going to burst on that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe soon. that's probably unfair. There's been a few bad ones this year, but I think it'll bounce back.
Okay, here's my pitch. When that happens,
yes.
You need to rebrand.
Okay.
Just do con artist movies.
Okay, all
and
right.
It can be The Weekly Plan It.
That's good stuff.
Plan It.
I love it.
Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.